Poet, publican and drover Barney Davies is Tibooburra's oldest resident and has the stories of a long and full life to prove it. Barney spent many years droving all over New South Wales, South Australia and Queensland and eventually came to be in Tibooburra when his father-in-law bought the family hotel in 1962. At Barney's front gate, we're greeted by his daughter Dale, one of three who take turns coming up to live with him through the year.
Would you like a coffee or a tea?
I'd love a cup of tea, yeah. Thank you.
She sits us down with cups of tea, some fresh baked biscuits and a fan you'll hear in the background from time to time. Impossible to turn off when you're in your 90s in a Tibooburra summer.
A lot of the old fellas are in the cemetery now, all the old Rover blokes.
Not you though.
I'm in the waiting room too.
Doesn't look like it to me.
I'm a 25 model. Born on the 20th of the 5th, 1925.
And how did you come to be in Tibooburra?
I was down looking after a property down called The Selection, just this side of Broken Hill. And, and the children needed schooling. And Josie's dad from Narriara, he bought the family hotel off an old chap called Jimmy Blaw, and he wanted us to go in it. And so we needed schooling for the children. We did have a governess, but so we took the job on at the family hotel. Went in 1962, I think it was, and I was 5 years on The Selection, and I think we went in 1962, and I was there for about 25 years. Yes, he was a good work, like you were flat out all the time. There was no, and it was quite a busy time because there was no national parks in them days. So all the properties around had families and people working and stock, Mount Wood, Olive Downs, they were all busy properties. Mount King. So it was
a busy pub back then.
It was a busy pub, and CWA day, all the people had come in. It was a busy day, and all the ladies there with their and the CWA meetings. But other than that, life just went on and on and on and on. But I wasn't real happy in the pub because I never had much education, and only what I'd taught myself or beyond bloody stock. So that was about it.
Before you were out on properties or the property near Broken Hill and before you took on the pub, you spent quite a few years droving, didn't you? How did you come to be in that line of work?
In my early life I did.
Mm.
And right when I was quite young, 12-year-old, I think my uncle took me away and then I went with different other drovers, like old Greg McGregor or Roy McGregor. They were all drovers. But they were good, but that was a rough life and you had to do your job, otherwise you get the whip across your bum quick. No mucking about. And so I just drifted around and with different drovers, and I finished up with old Red Jack Easton, and I was with old Jack for about 3 years. And we brought different mobs of cattle down from Buller Downs, mainly down here to Kidman Reed cattle. And I spent a fair bit of time with old Jack. And then I left old Jack, and then I went on I got a job in Broken Hill on the plantation at the mines. And then I went underground for a while. I didn't like that, and I went back with old Jeff Sanford then to Nocatunga, and we brought bringing cattle down from Nocatunga. And after that, it was just here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah.
I've just forgotten. It was doing that bloody much, you know.
Yeah, so you've worked droving in the mines, on the properties, behind the bar, had a go at everything.
I had trucks for a while, carting cattle,
mm-hmm.
a and mainly from Tickalara, and old Billy Hall had Tickalara at that time, and I carted quite a few cattle for him down to the abattoirs and whatever.
Do you remember what the longest drive you ever did, like when you were driving, the longest run?
Around about 9 weeks.
Yep.
Yeah, that was about the longest one, I think. But then you go up and then you take your plant up, and then you sometimes you're tailing for a while until they get your mob together.
Well, you'll have to explain that to us. What's a plant?
Oh, that's your plant is your horses, your packs, your swag, your tucker bag. You have a pack bag like your packs, and then you've got your tucker pack for your all your sources and all your for the ground, for your dinner camp and night camp, and that's your plant. And then you might have five packs. There might be 4 or 5 years with about 1,200 head of cattle or whatever the mob may be. Mainly from Nokatunga, there were about 650. We'd bring down. They were all Borleys, and the Borley cattle, and they were lovely. First thing of a morning, you see them coming up over the brow of a hill. It was a picture to see them spread out, you know. And they were the good old droving days, but they were rough. You lived fairly rough. Bark who rot. You'd get a lot of bark. We had no veggies much, and then you're living on bloody mainly corn meat because you couldn't keep it. You'd kill, and you could have fresh meat for a little while, but it had to be all corned, otherwise it'd just go off. And you put it out at night and bag it up again first thing in the morning and put it back in your meat bag and packs. And that was your plant. That's where you lived. And
It was your job to set that up, pack it up, set it up.
Yeah, your lounge room floor was alongside you, yeah.
Just the dirt.
Yeah. But anyway, that's the way it went. And you look forward to that. You looked after your stock, and you fed them well and made them content at night. Water. Sometimes you'd have dry stages. You'd have to go out a certain way and then walk them on. And there was quite a lot to do in them with droving, to look after your stock. That's the main thing. And
can you remember one of the most interesting or beautiful things you saw while you were droving?
Oh no, everything seemed to be the same and bloody No, so we'll see a few odd min-min light in the night, you know.
We've got some tourists who'll be listening to this who've never heard of a min-min light. Can you tell us what's a min-min light?
Oh, well, I can't tell you much about it. They seem to go in the glow. I remember once, I used to get up about 4 o'clock, or up past 4 in the morning, and go after me plant. See, the horse tailor's job is when you make camp, you find the best feed you can for your plant. The plant horse is around about 25 to 30 horses, and sometimes less, but we had always had about 25 or whatever. And you'd find the best feed for your horses and take them out and hobble them out and water and hobble them out and whatever. And I remember one night, I was way out across this plain, and it was early hours in the morning, and I saw this light. Anyway, and I said, oh, it must be a vehicle or something going down there. So anyway, I humbled up and I got over to old Jack, and I said, what was that light, Jack? He said, I don't know, it was over there near you, wasn't it? He said, I could see it. He said, I seen it too. And just, it'd go along and then all of a sudden, go out. And that'd be it. Sometime at Canalpi, I see one come along. I was camped there on my own for a couple of weeks, and I was waiting for somebody to turn up, and I saw this light, not down in this creek, and you could see the leaves and the tree, going along, and then all of a sudden it went out. Well, my bristles went up then, because I jammed the, what I could against the old door at the old hut. And anyway, next morning I went looking for tracks, but there was no tracks. That was a min min light.
Ooh, yeah. Mysterious.
I've only seen about three in my lifetime, but they're mainly out in open country and whatever. It must be a glow of something. I don't know. There's nothing to worry about anyway.
No yeah. Alien abductions or anything?
Oh, no, no. Nothing like that.
Do you miss riding horses?
No, not really. I've done all my life mainly on horses and mucking around with stock, you know. Horse work and stock work. No motorbikes. I never could ride a motorbike. I don't like them. They knock them around too much. But you could... We done all my work was done on horseback.
And so after finishing up there, headed to Broken Hill, did a little bit of mine work, then ended up on a station for a while.
Yeah.
How did you come to be running the family hotel?
Oh, well, as I said, Jim, Jossie's dad, bought the pub, and then he wanted us to go into it, and we had 7 children. But Peter was born here in the hospital here in Tipperborough, and so they needed it, so we came here and took over the pub, and so they could have schooling and whatever, and then they went away to their different convents and whatever, and as they grew older. So we were in there for about 25 years, and it was long hours, you know, long hours, and I wasn't so used to being on my feet all the time, and bloody feet would be burning, and there'd be arguments and breaking up fights, and oh, God knows what. There was a lot of people around in them days, and I was there when the pipeline went through, and there was just biggest gangs of men, and... So it was just a busy job, and I was glad to get out of it. Yeah.
You were there when the famous murals were painted on the wall. Can you tell me about that? Who did those?
Yeah, well, old Clifton Pugh, he came up, and there was him and Eric Worrell and Tassie Drysdale. I had old Tassie there for about 2 weeks, and another fellow called Fred Williams, they're all top artists, you know. And they, Cliff said he wanted to put the mural again on the wall, which he did. And then he had old Bacchus in the fur wall. And then, anyway, there was a couple of old ladies, they weren't too happy. I don't think they ever saw a man strip. And they put on a bit of a turn to the police.
Really? But, they reported the mural to the police?
And he had to cover him up and put a fig leaf over the top of it. So after that, it all cooled down, he put him back in as he was, you know. So he's still there sitting on the wall with a happy smile on his face and all his handmaidens all hanging around him.
It looks like a pretty wild time. Is that indicative of what Tipperborough was like in those days?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Tipperborough was a real happy town. And as I say, before the national parks, there was Olive Downs, Mount Wood, and all the stations around had men and families. And I think there was about 72 children going to school here at the time, and 2 teachers. And all along the border fence, there was families. And then they had a matron down here at the hostel, and a lot of the children from out back stayed at the hostel. And there was always big gathering CWA every month. There would be a CWA meeting, and they'd all come in and have a wow of a time in town and go again, and that'd be it.
So it was quite a community hub, the pub.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 2 hotels, of course, and that was it. So...
I understand that you're in the mural as well.
Yeah, bareback. he put me riding bareback with one spur on. I lost one.
Was that right? You lost a spur? Yeah, it was a true story.
It was a wild night. Oh, dear. So, yeah, that was it.
What are your memories of Clifton? What was he like?
Clifton, he was a good friend of mine. And, I got on well with Cliff, and he rang me only a fortnight before he died. I was taking him up onto a water roller. He can do some painting. And I showed him a fair bit of things, and it went in there, he done to me. And he done some portraits and whatever. And through Cliff, then I met Fred Williams and Drysdale, and Frank Hodgkinson, all top artists, you know, but they're all gone now, they're all dead, they're all gone back. And so Cliff and I got on really good together. He always wanted me to go down to Victoria there, and when he'd go back with his paintings from around this area and talk to people, but I didn't ever went down. I stayed home. Anyway, yeah, but he was a good friend, yeah.
What do you think caught the attention of all those artists that were coming out at the time? Why do you think they loved Tipperary so much?
They liked this open country too, and the bare ground, you know, like the dry time. They liked the different colours, and that's what sort of favoured them quite a bit. But they, not only Tipperary, but they'd venture out into different corners and what around. And there was other artists besides them, which were well-known ones too. And they all done good jobs. Even my little friend Vicky. That's the old mushroom camp there. She used to cook in that camp, and that's one of her paintings. Vicky Hemley. And the Border Gate, and done different whole campfire.
Wow, yep.
That's our campfire there.
Yeah, that's a beautiful picture.
What, yeah?
What are the main changes you've seen in this area in your time out here?
Oh, main changes? Oh, yeah, things have changed a little bit to what they were. But, I don't know. I just don't... I just keep to myself now and let the rest of the world go by.
It seems to be more tourists that come through than
workers. Oh, yeah, quite a few, which is good to see. I like to see the travellers. It'll be good when they get this other road sealed up here through the border. And it's good to see people moving. And now I'm quite happy to see them come and go. Yeah, I wish them all the best.
Some of them travelling are new to country roads and the dangers, I guess, of travelling or camping out here. Do you have any tips for people who might be out here for the
just
first time?
Pull the foot off. They've got to go steady and look at the country. It's no good to go on big top speeds and you can't look around. I said, just poke along and pull your foot off a bit and just take it easy. Don't be in a hurry. Yeah. Trouble is now everything in a bustle, isn't it? One time nobody was in a hurry. You just take your time. Oh, we'll do that tomorrow. Yeah. Tomorrow never comes.
If people were coming to visit here, what would you tell them to see around these parts?
Oh, well, the only thing they could see would be... National Parks have got a brochure out of the area, and... they've got their different walkways and different things like that. So, it's just through their brochures, you know, and look around the town or whatever they want to look for, gold or specking, and different ones got their little detectors and go look around. And, a lot of people coming back because... they getting away from the hustle and bustle, I think. You know, it's a nice quiet life out here, and there's plenty of nice camps like along the creek and things like that. and they got their caravans, and yeah, it's just not like the old pack horse days.
That's right. It's a bit of luxury now, isn't it?
A bit of luxury, yeah. And I don't mind it. I love it. Yeah. I like the air conditioning. And yeah, and I'm as soft as butter. Yeah, and I can't handle it no more.
Sounds like you did your time on those droving trails.
Yeah, knock off. Retired now. My life was never dull or stale. My world was all aglow. When I first started work, where all the drovers go. And how we starved when work was slack, but we bowed to nature's frowns. As I worked my way along the stock route, from Dereal down to Canalpie Downs. And how we freeze when the stars were pale, and then worked in frosts as white as snow. But I met a lovely little girl out on the overflow. We married, and 65 years ago.
Wow.
I just made that up.
That did you? Oh, my goodness. I didn't realise you were a poet as well.
Well, I wrote a lot of poetry, different poetry and that.
Mm-hmm.
All about in the early days and whatever.
Yeah, right.
Droving days.
Thanks to Barney Davies and his daughter Dale for their time and stories. I'm Amy Volkowski. This episode of Meet the Locals was produced by Bushwitch Productions in collaboration with Jason King Media for the Sturt Steps touring experience. Sturt Steps is a touring route that covers over 1,100 kilometres in the Corner Country, outback New South Wales. This project is funded by the New South Wales Government and administered by the Milparinca Heritage and Tourism Association Incorporated. For more information, head to the website at www.sturtsteps.com.au.